May 31st, 2023. May 31st. The time is 13:58 hours Eastern Daylight Time. From 2011, this is Wynton Marsalis and Eric Clapton and an orchestra playing Carina Carina.
Thank you.
Well, it's a very long rendition. That was their encore song that they performed. As I understand, it was April 2011 at the concert that they gave at the Lincoln Center at that time. And I wanted to share that with you. Our study for today from Wild Road, Little Children, is from Part 2, Chapter 10, Paragraph 8. And I edited the typos that I could remember from Parts 1 and Part 2 yesterday. I know there's at least one that I've not gotten to yet. I don't know if maybe someone could remind me what that is. But Abraham lived fully 5 generations after Peleg, thus could not possibly have known Nimrod. And the Bible is clear that the king ruling Shinar in Abraham's time is named Amraphel, who appears wrongly identified in many non-canonical writings. For example, the Book of Jasher. Such fabrications may account for textual corruptions. And for whatever reason, Jewish tradition has lost also its true sense of chronology, even in much later times. For example, the date that the Jewish tradition holds for the destruction of Jerusalem is different from all other accounts of historians. It's completely disconnected from any history that would be remotely conventional at all. So it's one example, but it's true of all of the Jewish chronology in their tradition. So there are just many textual corruptions in other things, in other writings besides the Jewish tradition. Also, that's not just the Jewish tradition that we're talking about. Bryant has followed this nonsensical path, wrongly so. Talking about Abraham living at the time of Amraphel, which is the correct path, but Bryant has followed the other path. We identified the time of Abraham as contemporary with the great ruler of Mesopotamia named Gudea. That was in our article, The Ark of Urartu and the Orient Express. I believe that's where it was. Let's see if we have a footnote here. Footnote 2, certainly. Yeah. Right. Yes, footnote 2, which is, where is that? Right. The connection of Keter Leomer to Gudea is footnote 2, the Ark of Urartu. Right. And this Gudea was the one who struck Anshan in Persia in his year 6. This is incredible. This is amazing. That this is recorded I found it on Wikipedia. I don't know if it's going to be still on Wikipedia, but it was on Wikipedia. I found this is part of conventional discovery and history, and whose name, this Gudea, it matches that name of Keter Leomer of Genesis 14. Compare Keter with Gudea, almost identical in terms of the general consonants there, the G and the D compared to CH and D, K, Keter compared to G, Gudea, it's the same same name. The only difference being the vowels. And Gudea doesn't have an R at the end, of course, but R can be almost a silent consonant in some languages. And that also of the name of Kudur Lagomar, K-U-D-U-R, compared to C-H-E-D-O-R, and G-U-D-A, the three names. Now compare Kudur with Gudea, it's very similar also. Of whom Gudea, that is, or Kudur Lagomar, there are of whom 26 at least 26 statues have been found of this person called Kudur Lagomar or Gudea, and whose date has been seen decisively to align with Abraham's dating in the BG, even the year 6 Persian victory being dated as 2139 or 38 BCE by secular sources, which is quite astounding, seeing as it's incredible. When we add 6 plus 2139, what do we get? We get 2145. Wow. And Abraham's age in this year, 2139 or 2138, is 67 or 68 years old, according to that, right? According to his birth in the BG. Our chronology, which was Abraham born in 2206, so in 2139, adds 67 to 39, and we get, you know, 106, which is, it ends up being 2206, compared to his age in the book of Jasher of 65 years at a time, which is close to 67, obviously, at a time in the Bible when Abraham is still called Abram, as it is before this, because he didn't become Abraham until he was 99, I believe. Is that right? I think that's right. When he was told about the birth of his son to come, his son Isaac, who was to be born. And the agreement in age is near perfect. The connection of Keter Laomer to Gudea was in the Blessed Genealogy, or the BG. We made that connection. No one else made that connection that I've ever seen. Since the Laomer part, quote, Laomer, end quote, L-A-O-M-E-R, that ending of the name Keter Laomer, since that has been associated with Lagash and Gudea, Laomer is associated with Lagash, and Gudea ruled Lagash. So, Keter Laomer is perfect of a name for Gudea. It's absolutely perfect. It is unmistakable that Keter Laomer is Gudea. Evidently, we have the evidence there. Laomer and Lagash is the place Gudea ruled, and the Keter Laomer is in the Bible. So Gudea Laomer, or Keter Laomer, it's the same name. The further coincidence puts 2141 BCE as the Empire of Assyria's start date. That's the other thing. We had the Assyrian Empire beginning in 2141 BCE by our own calculations. Purely by our own calculations, not by any other calculations. And then when we see that Gudea, what year was Abraham 65 years old? That was exactly in the year 2141, right? That's the 65th year of Abraham's life. After 2206, so it's absolutely perfect, with Gudea doing these things in, it's just wild, in year 6, and then there were 5 and 10 years associated with these dates in the book of Jasher that talked about this person, Chedorlaomer, also, as well as in the Bible. It's mentioned in the Bible, but in the book of Jasher, it mentions the ages and the times when these things occurred, which are not in the Bible. And we don't necessarily expect the book of Jasher to be right, but it looks like it exactly coincided to the chronology that we had determined by an other independent means. So it was quite astounding to discover this. And, well, it's talked about elsewhere how we arrive at these numbers and everything in more detail. But it is exactly right. It was exactly right. So Jehovah makes Gudea as Ninus. The worship of the god Ningirsu, the wife of Gudea being Ninala, the large village named Nina near Lagash, the temple there named Ininu, dedicated to Ningirsu, also known as Ninurta, all point to the name Ninus as fitting Gudea very well, as there are also many evidences of the trappings of war. However, this is not enough when chronology is wrongly determined. Right? If we have all the evidence that two people are the same person, but their dates are 100 years different, how can they be the same person, right? Or how can they be the same person if the dates are 500 years different? I mean, the dates have to line up. Yet, the BG puts right what was wrong with that. Everyone must change their chronology, we read here, to align it with the BG, or be left, quote, in our dust, end quote, it would seem. Strong words in that paragraph about the BG, which is the Blessed Genealogy, which is our chronology. Because we had certain things happened in the 10th year that Abraham was in the land of promise, or the land of Canaan. And certain things happened in his 5th year that he was there. And the year that he came, how old he was when he arrived there initially, was given in the book of Jasher. All these numbers were given. And what Chedorlaomer was doing at these particular times were also given in the book of Jasher. And they give us a picture which exactly lines up with both the Bible and our chronology, apart from this one detail that Abraham didn't permanently move to Canaan until he was 75. That's the one detail that is... But it's even mentioned in the book of Jasher that that's the case, that Abraham went back to his homeland, or his interim homeland in Haran, prior to finally permanently moving all of his things to Canaan. He went back there, and the time when he went back there and when he moved is given exactly in agreement with the Bible. So everything is so well aligned. It's just that the Bible doesn't give all of the details, and despite that, there's no conflict. We have a remarkable chronology. But the amazing wonderful miraculous alignment that occurred without any, it never happens. I've done years of research in chronology, and nothing ever happens by accident that works out correctly. I mean, it never happens. And in that case, it did work out perfectly. And it shouldn't. Not by any random chance, certainly. So the fact that it did work out was just a blessing. But that was only one thing that worked out, too. There were other amazing, other things that could only be explained as coming from Jehovah, not by any other means. So our proverb for today, little children, is from Proverbs 26:4. Do not answer anyone stupid according to his foolishness, that you yourself also may not become equal to him. And now our reading from the book of Exodus. This is the last chapter of Exodus, chapter 40. We're going to be finishing Exodus Jehovah willing, today. Then Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, on the day of the first month, on the first of the month, this is after they constructed all the different parts necessary for the tabernacle, you are to set up the tabernacle of the tent of meeting, and you must place the Ark of the Testimony in it, and shut off approach to the Ark with the curtain. And you must bring the table in, and set its arrangement in order, and you must bring in the lampstand, and light up its lamps, and you must put the golden altar for incense before the Ark of the Testimony, and put the screen of the entrance for the tabernacle in place. And you must put the altar of burnt offering before the entrance of the tabernacle of the tent of meeting. And you must put the basin between the tent of meeting and the altar, and put water in it. And you must place the courtyard round about, and put up the screen of the gate of the courtyard. And you must take the anointing oil, and anoint the tabernacle and all that is in it. And you must sanctify it and all its utensils, and so it must become something holy. And you must anoint the altar of burnt offering and all its utensils, and sanctify the altar, and so it must become a most holy altar. And you must anoint the basin and its stand and sanctify it. Then you must bring Aaron and his sons near to the entrance of the tent of meeting and wash them with water. And you must clothe Aaron with the holy garments and anoint him and sanctify him, and so he must act as priest to me. After that you will bring his sons near, and you must clothe them with robes, and you must anoint them just as you anointed their father, and so they must act as priests to me, and their anointing must serve continually for them as a priesthood to time indefinite during their generations. And Moses proceeded to do all according to all that Jehovah had commanded him. He did just so. Accordingly, it came about that in the first month, in the second year, on the first day of the month, the tabernacle was set up. When Moses proceeded to set up the tabernacle, he went putting its socket pedestals down, and placing its panel frames, and putting its bars in, and setting up its pillars. Then he spread out the tent over the tabernacle, and placed the covering of the tent above upon it, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. After that he took the testimony and put it into the ark, and placed the poles on the ark, and put the cover above upon the ark. Then he brought the ark into the tabernacle, and put the curtain of the screen in place, and shut off approach to the ark of the testimony, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Next he put the table in the tent of meeting on the side of the tabernacle to the north outside the curtain, and he arranged the row of bread upon it before Jehovah, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Then he placed the lampstand in the tent of meeting in front of the table on the side of the tabernacle to the south. He then lit up the lamps before Jehovah, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. He next placed the golden altar in the tent of meeting before the curtain, that he might make perfumed incense smoke upon it, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Finally, he put the screen of the entrance of the tabernacle in place. And he placed the altar of burnt offering at the entrance of the tabernacle of the tent of meeting, that he might offer up the burnt offering and the grain offering upon it, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Then he placed the basin between the tent of meeting and the altar, and put water in it for washing. And Moses and Aaron and his sons washed their hands and their feet at it. When they went into the tent of meeting, and when they went near to the altar, they would wash, just as Jehovah had commanded Moses. Finally, he set up the courtyard round about the tabernacle and the altar, and put up the screen of the gate of the courtyard. So Moses finished the work. And the cloud began to cover the tent of meeting, and Jehovah's glory filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to go into the tent of meeting, because the cloud resided over it, and Jehovah's glory filled the tabernacle. And when the cloud lifted itself up from over the tabernacle, the sons of Israel would break camp during all their stages of journey. However, if the cloud did not lift itself up, then they would not break camp until the day when it lifted itself up. For Jehovah's cloud was over the tabernacle by day, and a fire continued upon it by night in the sight of all the house of Israel during all their stages of journey. That's the end of the book of Exodus. We finished it, so if you've been with us this far, you've now finished. You've studied all of the book of Genesis and the book of Exodus, the first two books of Moses, known as the Torah, the five books of the Torah altogether. All five books of Moses are called in that way. They're named the Torah in the Jewish tradition. But the Genesis book and the Exodus book are the first two of those books. And we've now completed those. The tabernacle was set up. Mark chapter 4. Now, little children. And Jesus again started teaching beside the sea, and a very great crowd gathered near him, so that he went aboard a boat and sat out on the sea, but all the crowd beside the sea were on the shore. So he began to teach them many things with illustrations, and to say to them in his teaching, "Listen, look, the sower went out to sow, and as he was sowing, some seed fell alongside the road, and the birds came and ate it up. And other seed fell upon the rocky place, where it, of course, did not have much soil, and it immediately sprang up because of not having depth of soil. But when the sun rose, it was scorched, and for not having root, it withered. And other seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked it, and it yielded no fruit. But others fell upon the fine soil, and coming up and increasing, they began to yield fruit, and they were bearing. They were bearing 30-fold, and 60, and 100. So he added the word, "Let him that has ears to listen, listen." Now when he got to be alone, those around him with the 12 began questioning him on the illustrations. And he proceeded to say to them, "To you the sacred secret of the kingdom of God has been given, but to those outside all things occur in illustrations, in order that though looking they may look and yet not see, and though hearing they may hear and yet not get the sense of it, nor ever turn back and forgiveness be given them." Further he said to them, "You do not know this illustration, and so how will you understand all the other illustrations? The sower sows the word. These then are the words, these then are the ones alongside the road where the word is sown. But as soon as they have heard it, Satan comes and snatches, takes away the word that was sown in them. And likewise, these are the ones sown upon the rocky soil or places. As soon as they have heard the word, they accept it with joy. Yet they have no root in themselves, but they continue for a time. Then as soon as tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, they are stumbled. There are still others who are sown among the thorns. These are the ones that have heard the word, but the anxieties of this system of things and the deceptive power of riches and the desires for the rest of the things make inroads and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Finally, the ones that were sown on the fine soil are those who listen to the word and favorably receive it and bear fruit, 30-fold and 60 and 100. And he went on to say to them, "A lamp is not brought to be put under a measuring basket or under a bed, is it? It is brought to be put upon a lampstand, is it not? For there is nothing hidden except for the purpose of being exposed. Nothing has become carefully concealed but for the purpose of coming into the open. Whoever has ears to listen, let him listen." He further said to them, "Pay attention to what you are hearing. With the measure that you are measuring out, you will have it measured out to you. Yes, you will have more added to you. For he that has will have more given to him. But he that does not have, even what he has, will be taken away from him." So he went on to say, "In this way the kingdom of God is just as when a man casts the seed upon the ground, and he sleeps at night and rises up by day, and the seed sprouts and grows tall, just how he does not know. Of its own self, the ground bears fruit gradually, first the grass blade, then the stalk head, finally the full grain in the head. But as soon as the fruit permits it, he thrusts in the sickle, because the harvest time has come." And he went on to say, "With what are we to liken the kingdom of God, or in what illustration shall we set it out? like a mustard grain, which at the time it was sown in the ground was the tiniest of all the seeds that are on the earth. But when it has been sown, it comes up and becomes greater than all other vegetables and produces great branches, so that the birds of the heaven are able to find lodging under its shadow. So with many illustrations of that sort, he would speak the word to them as far as they were able to listen. Indeed, without an illustration, he would not speak to them. But privately to his disciples, he would explain all things. On that day, when evening had fallen, he said to them, "Let us cross to the other shore." So after they had dismissed the crowd, they took him in the boat, just as he was, and there were other boats with him. Now a great violent windstorm broke out, and the waves kept dashing into the boat so that the boat was close to being swamped. But he was in the stern, sleeping upon a pillow. So they woke him up and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are about to perish?" With that he roused himself and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be quiet." And the wind abated and a great calm set in. So he said to them, "Why are you faint-hearted? Do you not yet have any faith?" But they felt an unusual fear, and they would say to one another, "Who really is this? Because even the wind and the sea obey him." That's the end of Mark chapter 4. And that's the end of our study for today, little children. So, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. But what else is there to talk about today? There are a lot of things probably. It's very warm today. The air conditioner is running strongly, continually. But it's very warm. It's going to be very warm tomorrow, I believe, too. Yeah, we have some very, very warm weather right now. I'm sleeping about 6 hours a night. Not terribly much. I got some new vitamin K2, a new form of it, which comes with alfalfa. It's either part of the alfalfa, or I'm not sure. I think it was. Maybe it's just part of the alfalfa. So it comes with the alfalfa as part of it. Alfalfa is contained in the capsules. So it has more than just K2. But it's got the MK4 form of vitamin K2, which is extremely good. But I believe the form of K2 that I was using for my arthritis was the MK7 form. That was what I found to be the most effective, because I didn't at that time have any MK4. But I know that the MK7 is effective for arthritis. But during the allergy season, my arthritis flares up, because it's a rheumatoid type of arthritis. So it's not always nutritional. It's sometimes caused by the allergic reactions, which might be related to nutrition, but could be partly genetic, or I don't know personally what causes it. I don't think anyone knows what causes any disease, other than, for example, we know what causes infections. We know what causes many infections, certainly. We know the particular bacteria or the particular viruses that cause different infections. We don't need to know what they are when we know how to cure them, how to cure the infection. For example, food poisoning is an infection, is it not? It's caused by the bacteria in the food, like salmonella, for example. Different food poisonings are bacterial. They're bacterial. And if they're infections, because they're bacterial, which they are, guess what? That means that vitamin C will cure food poisoning. All you have to do is take vitamin C in sufficient quantities. So food poisoning is another thing that vitamin C is the cure for. Remarkably so. But truthfully so. So if you get a little bit of food poisoning, or no matter how much food poisoning, you take vitamin C the same way you do when you have an infection. Take it in several gram or 2 gram per 15 minute quantities, whatever you can take, whatever you're able to take. But don't take too much, because you might be in some distress if you take more than you need. So that's why you take it in a certain amount of grams, for example, about 2 grams, for example, every 15 minutes, or, you know, if you can't take that much, you could take a gram every 15 minutes, I suppose. Or if you're younger, if you're too young, your body weight is less than that of an adult, then proportionally you take less than 2 grams, perhaps. But even, I believe, a four-year-old can take 2 grams every 15 minutes or 20 minutes, I think. I don't even think it's a problem for a four-year-old, but as you get smaller, you can't take that much, probably. So if you're treating an infant, then it's got to be proportional to body weight. So scale it down according to body weight. But, I mean, an adult can take 6 grams at one time, but if you take 6 grams every 15 minutes, you might have a problem because you might have overdone it, and that it causes diarrhea. So it only causes diarrhea once the virus is cured. So you don't want to overdo it. You just want to cure the virus or the bacteria, if in the case of any other bacterial infection, such as, for example, food poisoning. So that's pretty remarkable. But vitamin K2, I'm going to be able to get I wanted to get the MK4 by itself, because even though there's an excellent form of MK4 in the liquid MK4, and unfortunately, the place I was getting the liquid MK4 stopped providing it, stopped, what's the word, offering it. They stopped offering it for sale, and I searched everywhere else online and couldn't find it. And then I found a place that had it, but that was after I'd ordered the MK4 in the alfalfa form, of which I ordered a lot. I ordered a lot of that. So, but that's because I need that, because that form comes without vitamin D in it. And that's very useful to have that, because you can take more K2, and then you can take your vitamin D separately and find out, you know, what the mixture needs to be. Now, maybe you should always have vitamin D with it. I don't know, but I'll have to order vitamin D. That's all, so that I don't run out of the vitamin D. But some of the advantages of doing it this way is that, for example, you can sometimes, if you're ordering somewhere, you might get vitamin D very cheaply, or you might get it as a bonus when you order other supplements. It might come for free. You might get free vitamin D, so you don't have to have the vitamin D with the K2. You can take it additionally. It's good to have them together, but if you're not sure how much vitamin K2 is possibly going to be beneficial, and you need to try that, you might want to try it without the D, so that you don't take an excessive amount of vitamin D initially, until you figure out how much vitamin D is needed by taking the vitamin D as a separate supplement. And that's the reason why I bought the vitamin K2 in the separate MK4 without the vitamin D form. So you can get it without vitamin D, and you can get it with vitamin D. Normally, when you're first starting out, you're going to take it with vitamin D. So, but if you're finding that it's really beneficial, and you want to find out if it can be even more beneficial by taking more, you might not want to take so much vitamin D with it. So you might want to have it in a separate isolated MK4 by itself form. MK4 is also called menatetranone. It's a menaquinone form of vitamin K2. It's called MK4 because of the M is for menaquinone, the K is for vitamin K, and the 7 is for the length of the molecular chain. Whereas, or the MK4 would be the length of the molecule would be 4 in the case of MK4. MK7, it's 7 that's the length of the molecule, the length of the chain in the vitamin K2 molecule. So in the menaquinone, it's a menaquinone, and you can have M for menaquinone, K for vitamin K, and then 7 being the length of the particular menaquinone, or 4 being a different length of a particular menaquinone molecule. So MK4, MK7, there's such a thing as MK9. I've seen it for sale online. I believe it was MK9. I haven't bought that one yet. I guess I should buy that one too as a supplement. And there's also MK13 is available, MK11, I believe. There are 9 known forms of vitamin K2 or menaquinones. 9 known, but only 3 of them that I know of that have been for sale somewhere as a supplement. They're contained in food, but MK13 is not easy to find in food. I think it's in the very finest beef liver, in the Kobe beef in Japan, for example. I believe that has significant amounts of MK13. But, I mean, the Kobe beef is very expensive. I can't imagine what Kobe beef liver would cost. Typically, the Kobe beef is extremely expensive. But anyway, I love you very much. I love sharing with you what I know. I know very little, I would say. That's another thing I need to make clear. I just happen to know a lot more than some people who don't have any knowledge of these things. That's all. But I know very little myself about any of these things. And I'll be learning and adjusting what I know and explaining more as I acquire more knowledge. So have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Be rejoicing in all your work. Praise Jehovah, and may He bless you, and may He bless us through His Son Jesus with the marvelous accounts that we have about Jesus also in our lives as we read them. It is May 31st, 2022. It's 14:40 hours Eastern Daylight Time. On my behalf, this is Annie. And Annie's telling me it's Wednesday because Annie has a wide day display at the top, right there. It's the bottom that you're seeing. That's the day display for Annie, the Bauhaus watch. Iron Annie, the watch is called. And this is Dusty, the Moon Dust watch from the Saturn V rocket tribute series of watches made by Liv Watches. And saying, as these two watches are, bye for now.